Welcome to Beyond the Ballot. I'm Max, joined by my co-hosts Daniel and Rory. And this week, we're looking at four stories that reveal a lot about power, pressure, and political identity. The ICE shootings in the United States, Zach Polanski and the Greens sharpening their economic message, a growing wave of conservative defections, and a key divide inside Labour. Keir Starmer versus Andy Burnham. We'll break down what's happening, why it matters, and what it tells us about where politics is heading for voters, parties, and institutions. So let's get into it. We're going to start off by talking about the ICE shootings and political responsibility. So just to get our listeners up to speed, the recent ICE shootings have reignited intense debate in the United States around immigration enforcement, political rhetoric, and accountability. So ICE already sits at the center of one of America's most polarizing policy areas. And these shootings have raised concerns about both enforcement culture, operational pressure, and political language. Now, a question for you, Rory. What responsibility do you think that political leaders have when these enforcement agencies become flashpoints in the media?
I think they should take responsibility, especially if they're backing them, like President Trump. He's obviously a very keen supporter of ICE, yeah. And he's been ascending all of them into Democrat-controlled cities and states, even like against their own wishes. So I think he's definitely got to own up to the rhetoric and the behaviour that ICE is carrying out in these areas. And I think especially when there's death and violence, I think he's most responsible, and his Homeland Security Secretary Kirsty Noem.
I think they definitely need to change the way that they're looking about immigration. I think it's becoming a bit too violent in that sense, and it sort of shows the UK in a sense. Obviously, Shabana Mahmood is looking at more radical ideas when it comes to immigration, about what sort of ideas that she should be implementing and not using potential violence as well. Daniel, what are your thoughts on the ICE shooting?
Well, I think it's horrific, to be perfectly honest. I say, obviously, inhumane, I'd say, having a sort of police force that, obviously, it's considered above the law and it's sort of permitted to do these things. And even then, sort of Trump going on Truth Social and also keeping on carrying on with this sort of radical immigration culture or things obviously I think both sides it will be weaponized for the reformers and people who want to see change. They'll definitely citing this systematic failures that ICE are producing. But then also on the other side, we could have people showing this is the strength, this is the no nonsense the policy might bring to the table, which I think is not what it's about.
Yeah, well, surely this would be beneficial in a way to some of the other parties in America.
What, the Democrats?
Not obviously, yeah, in terms of the Democrats, obviously, because they'll be able to put pressure on Trump, don't you think?
They've started trying to defund ICE, the House and the Senate. Congress, the Democrats in Congress are now suspending money from ICE as mini section of government shutdown.
Yeah.
If you look at the special elections that everywhere, and the net satisfaction of Donald Trump's immigration policies, then Democrats are definitely winning in those areas. Even immigration, but I think Trump has sort of solved immigration, but I think he's really screwed up with deportation. And I think that's definitely a aspect that Democrats are going to try and take him up on, especially going into the midterms in November.
Yep. Do you guys think that Trump should take responsibility, Daniel, maybe? Do you think he should say that maybe this was a mistake? Because obviously the public aren't particularly happy about the situations. I mean, two people have been killed. That doesn't shed light on the situation.
It doesn't really feel like that's what he does, to be honest. I don't think that he's the type of personality that sort of comes up with a system or a policy and then does goes back in himself and tries to apologise for it. Yeah, I'm not sure that he would be the type of person that, after putting a policy in place, after making a special force of people, would then like step back and say, oh, I apologise for what I've done. I'm not sure that he would be that kind of person, because I think that he would see that as himself as sort of presenting some kind of weakness.
Weakness, yeah.
Which I think, as if your sort of secret police force has kind of committed these killings, then I think that to then go back and then say, I'm sorry for what we did. I think he's going to try and carry on with like sort of the hardline, sort of radical enforcement.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure he's going to go back, and even though those people were US citizens as well.
Yeah. Rory, in terms of looking at the mistakes that politicians make, what do you think is the biggest mistake that politicians in general make when they're talking about immigration enforcement, especially after an incident like this? I mean, you saw JD Vance was even denying having any knowledge of the shootings, even though it is seen as run by the government.
Really. Yeah, well, I think that people just got to take responsibility, and everything just comes back down to honesty.
Yeah.
If you're responsible and if you take responsibility for the mistakes, obviously, the killings of two US citizens is much more than a mistake that you can rectify. But I think if people raise their hands up and say this was like not right, and if they take concrete action against it, then I think people will see them in a much more positive light. And I think politically that has so much more advantages for them for like re-election.
Yeah.
And that's the type of stuff that comes back to haunt them otherwise.
Yeah, I think you say that apology without action is nothing. So yeah. I feel like just what I said earlier, I'm not sure that after apologising, he would then do something
about
it.
He would do something about it, yeah.
I feel like he would carry on doing what it is at the moment.
Because trust is very important, isn't it, when you're trying to build a relationship with the public, especially when you're trying to...
Especially things like that.
Yeah, that's quite important definitely. As well. Yeah. And in terms of the idea of immigration, do you think that being more radical is the best way of having a crackdown, maybe?
Yeah, so I think sort of at the moment we've seen immigration now go down in the US, but I think the problem that they're facing with is trying to sort of get mass deportation with illegal immigrants out of the country.
Yeah.
So I think there's a much evidence to show that mass deportation is actually economically sort of unsuitable and would actually lose the country more money than they would have a working population inside the country. So I think part of this whole idea of mass deportation and showing that they have a strict enforcement on immigration is kind of just part of the Republicans image. So I actually don't, to be honest, I don't think they that Trump has the best interests at heart, to be honest. So I think that's what I think about it.
And
I think
Rory,
that more reasonable
more
reasonable and sensible means should be taken into account at this point to try and sort of get the best outcome for the country.
And Rory, if we talk about the UK's stance on immigration, do you think that being more radical, such as the plans that have already been announced by Shabana Mahmood, is a efficient way of looking at crackdown on immigration, maybe because of the way that Keir Starmer and Nigel Farage have posed immigration as such a threat to the UK, maybe?
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, there was no real work under Yvette Cooper when she was Home Secretary.
Yeah, they sort of just shifted her to...
They shifted her to the Foreign Office in September, replacing David Lammy.
Yeah.
But since Shabana Mahmood's come in, there's been a lot more faith in not only immigration, but also policing. which has been quite neglected in the Home Office, because obviously immigration is becoming such a big issue, with like 50% of people saying that it's one of their top three issues, according to YouGov. I think politically it is much better for reform to keep immigration low, or immigration high, because then it's a very good attack point for when they go into the next election, they can say, oh, the government hasn't done anything about it,
yeah.
Which is why they're running their MPs to vote, ironically, against immigration measures that Shabana Mahmood is proposing. But to answer your question like directly, I think it is much better for people to have a clear rhetoric and a clear opinion, a strong opinion on what they want to do, particularly with the controversy like surrounding the ethics of immigration.
Yeah.
And like people coming from like seeking, like genuine people seeking asylum from like war-torn countries, and then those others who, like, yes, they travel through France, so like why can't they stay there? So there's very two different like wings of opinion. But I think that given Shabana Mahmood's becoming a lot more, she's a lot tougher than Yvette Cooper is,
yeah.
It's bringing her a lot more favorability, which is just proof that having a strong stance, a strong rhetoric on your viewpoint, particularly around immigration, is definitely a beneficial thing.
I mean, I feel like countries, especially like the UK, are sort of not over milking the idea of immigration being out of control, but it's definitely something they're using to try and not unite the population, but giving them something to hate in order to make them support your party.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean.
Definitely a bit of scapegoating on that, as in, like, obviously Rory said there, it's very ironic that the Reform Party MPs are actually voting against Shabana Mahmood's policies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's definitely a part of the fact that they just want to be in power. And so they're just trying to use that sort of problem. If they really thought it was a problem, then they'd probably be doing something about it.
Mm.
With that vote that they have in-house. But, I think that's definitely a bit of scapegoating on there, if not quite a lot, to be honest.
Yeah. It's like the exact same with Brexit and with health. Like, as soon as the Brexit referendum came in and everyone was going to vote Leave, then like UKIP, which is a very Eurosceptic party led by Nigel Farage, their polling completely collapsed. Health was obviously a really big issue during the pandemic. 74% of people said that was one of the three big issues in March 2020.
Yeah.
But after the end of the first lockdown, that obviously came down. It is much like there's proof to back it up, especially in Nigel Farage's experience with Brexit, that if you keep these issues alight, these issues that probably unite people, like leaving the EU, like fixing our NHS, it definitely does. It brings credibility to how your party could solve it.
The way the party could do it, yeah.
And it there's incredibility from the parties like currently governing, like councils and government.
Yeah, and that's going to increase the
chances. The failure that they bring, and that's something that they could definitely attack Labour upon. And that's what they're doing with the Conservatives at the moment.
Thank you. We're now moving on to our next segment. In the UK, Zach Polanski is pushing the Green Party in a sharper, more economically focused direction. And this proves as a contrast to the previous points that the Green Party have held. So the key elements of his agenda are that there are wealth taxes aimed at multimillionaires and billionaires. He's attempting to align capital gains tax more closely with income tax, having rent controls, lowering energy bills, and expanding free public services. And he's aspiring to have public ownership of key utilities such as energy and water. So this focus is squarely on the cost of living. So Rory, what do you think is the weakest point in Polanski's economic pitch that opponents such as Labour or Reform will obviously want to attack first, because they're of course gaining so much ground?
Well, I think the fact that it's quite a socialist approach, obviously wealth taxes, there are very, by and large, they're a very left-wing party, much more socialist party, something that you would probably expect from the more radical wings of the Labour Party. I think he had an interview with The Rest Is Politics, and he didn't know the difference between the debt burden and the deficit. And I think that the fact that he's not paying a lot of attention to economics, but more on social issues and geopolitical issues, is probably something that he'll be attacked upon. Yeah. Also, he doesn't have a lot of experience He's a London Assembly member, but the Green Party as a political force, they don't have any kind of economic.
Well, he's not even an actual MP, is he?
Well, he's not an MP. No, he's not. And there are four, maybe even five soon, if they win in Gorton Denton, MPs who like have zero experience in economics. Obviously, there are 400 Labour MPs, so one of them bound to have some economic experience. Obviously, not Rachel Reeves. Yeah. The Tories are all quite wealthy, so they definitely have economic experience, and Reform are even more wealthy, so they probably have even more economic experience. But you don't get any of that from the Labour Party or the Liberal Democrats, really, even though they're quite a big political force. Yeah.
I mean, if we look at, obviously, a lot, don't you think that a lot of the Green Party's previous voters who would have wanted them to focus more on environmental issues will perhaps be more annoyed with this sudden shift to the cost of living over what the Green Party originally stood for?
Yeah, I think that the Greens, being like an environmental party, I mean, you could assume that, but like single issue parties don't tend to do very well. Obviously, a real exception is probably UKIP, who they were mainly focused on leaving the EU, and that brought them a lot of success in the vote share in 2015. Obviously, not in seat share, they only won, I think, one or two MPs.
Yeah.
But parties like Change UK, which was in 2019, which was like a unity between Labour and the Conservatives, like a moderate faction of both, came to united together to try and remain in the EU, as well as like the alliance between the SNP, Plaid and the Lib Dems going into that 2019 election. Yeah. So I think single issue politics doesn't really do very well. And I think from a strategic standpoint, I think Polanski's definitely done the right thing to move on to other issues. But that does like, that will probably, I think, I'm sure the Green Party will still have the same economic standpoint, particularly if they're going more left-wing, in a more left-wing direction. But I think that the fact that he's professionalising the party much more will definitely bring him more credibility. And I don't think he will lose more. I don't think he will lose a lot of voters, because I think those Green voters, like in 2024's election, I think they will stay with the Greens, because realistically, other than the shambles of your party, they don't really have anywhere else to go, especially as Labour's moving very quickly to the right, and there's a real ideological vacuum that the Greens are trying to capitalise upon.
Yeah. Daniel, don't you think that Polanski having one ideology that he's really honing in on can be something that is perhaps exploited maybe the next election, or does it pose as a real electoral threat to Labour?
So are you saying that Polanski is honing in on the economics, or is he honing in on the, like as Rory said, the sort of one goal that they had to begin with, which was environmental purposes?
Talking about he's honing in on the cost of living crisis being the main thing that he's trying to spread the his ideas about, really.
Well, I definitely say when comes with liberal ideologies comes with sort of younger voters. And I think younger voters are also suffering with the cost of living crisis. And so I think it's obviously a very clever idea to be talking about the cost of living crisis as it is a crisis, and also what his voters are looking for. I'd say that the Green Party are trying to move away from the fact that they are only one purpose.
Only one purpose,
And sort of, as we heard from, as we hear from MPs, they'd like, quote unquote, try to put us in our box, saying like they're only an environmental party, they only have one purpose, they're not going to do well. I think they're I would say successfully trying to move out of that box and talking about other issues now, recently talking about economics and things like that. And so I think they are moving out of that box, and I think that's a good thing for the party.
They're playing more confrontational instead of having these abstract ideas that they can't always implement, and I think that'd be quite useful maybe going into the next election, especially going obviously talking about the cost of living crisis. And if we're going to touch upon one of Polanski's other policies that he said that he would like to implement, and that's the idea he was talking about, legalizing Class A drugs. So I'm going to ask each of you your thoughts on this, because I think it's quite interesting, because he believes that people should be able to get the proper help that they need if the drugs are legalized. But surely if you legalize class A drugs such as heroin and cocaine, eventually that's just going to create more of an incentive for younger people to take these substances. Rory?
Yeah. I personally really disagree with legalization of class A drugs. But I think if you look at it from an ethical perspective, it isn't right. But if you look at it from an economic perspective, that's just going to put even more burden upon the NHS's shoulders, which it really does not need.
Because there'll be
right
more
now.
Cases of people overdosing, because it's legal.
And actually, the death rate's going to go up. So I don't actually understand really why he's... Also, his former occupation was quite controversial. He was like some weird massager. Masseuse, I think.
So, Daniel, what do you think about this idea of legalizing Class A drugs and the potential impacts that it could have on our National Health Service?
I think that, yeah, obviously, Rory said, it's going to put a strain on our NHS, I think. I think that's probably relatively true. Obviously, this is quite sort of a liberal idea, and I think it seems quite radical as well. It's not anything that the Britain has seen before.
It's not really something that
it's not something that's really come up before. Often. Not really spoken about. Yeah, yeah. I think treating using drugs to treat health issues is a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Obviously. And I mean, I'm not an expert on it, but I think I'd steer away, to be honest.
Yeah, because it's just going to put more strain on the NHS.
I don't know how much of that was a proper proposal, to be honest. I mean, I don't know if he was really taking that seriously or whether that was a sort of liberal declaration.
Yeah, I mean, because he was talking about how he's never taken drugs or alcohol in his life because he said he always wanted to be the sober one in his group of friends. So what is the incentive then for him, someone who has never taken alcohol or drugs, to legalize Class A drugs?
He's a very confusing character. I don't really like him, so yeah. I can't really defend him on that.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, I would say he's a bit confusing.
And that won't exactly help him at the next election when he's trying to obviously lay out his manifesto.
I mean,
exactly.
Obviously, as Rory said, there will be some voters that, like, right now will tell you, like, that I will be voting Green and that's what I will be doing.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, their aim right now is trying to get all those uncertain people who are drifting. I don't think that will steer away. I think that may steer away a few, actually, but not the ones that are already set.
So we're also seeing mounting evidence of strain inside the Conservative Party, with MPs defecting, standing down, or distancing themselves from leadership. So what is driving this? So there's a growing fear of electoral defeat, maybe the shame that could come with the next election of perhaps losing their seat. So maybe they're heading to reform for a chance of salvation. Rory, what do you think?
I think if you look at the polls, the Tories aren't doing very well. Obviously, since the budget, they have had quite a nice rise, about 2 points up, which is obviously in the margin of error, but it is definitely an optimistic trajectory. And I think that's very surprising that you saw 3 MPs. I'd say probably 2 very senior MPs and maybe 1 less senior, but still very damaging defection. I think they all are being driven, not just by ideology, which I'd say Suella Braverman's probably joined for. I was actually not surprised that she left.
Yeah.
I think what was surprising was how Robert Jenrick left, because obviously he was a very senior. He was probably going to take over.
If Kemi Badenoch knocked.
Well, if she did badly in May, he would probably take over. So I think it was a very telling sign that if he saw that his best interest would be better in reform rather than to lead the Tories. And I think that is definitely very damaging to their kind of expectations of winning.
Yeah, I agree. That is quite a telling sign. I mean, if for someone to think, I think, unfortunately, it was power first, sort of ideology second.
Yeah.
I definitely think, obviously, as you said, as a senior member of the Conservative Party, and if that person is kind of jumping ship almost.
It shows chaos and decline, doesn't it?
Yeah. It definitely is a very telling sign of a party that is looking like it will not it will fall second to the Reform Party, which is a sad thing to say personally. But obviously, it's a sort of very important indicator. Many, they're trying to get experience onto their party as well.
Yeah.
People who have been in government, with opposed to a party that is... one of the things that people have said about it is that it's not very experienced in government, obviously hasn't been experienced in government.
Yeah.
So I think that's what they're trying to label it as, is Tory weakness and also trying to get experience in the Reform Party as things, the main things.
It's quite bad experience as well, because obviously Suella Braverman,
despite
the rhetoric that she had while she was Home Secretary, she, like, migration wasn't really solved under her. I think ideologically, she's definitely a huge boost for Reform, but if people look at her track record and the track
she's
record
obviously
of
being high office.
Well, yeah, before, and her second her second in command in the Home Office was Robert Jenrick, who also left. He was specifically the immigration minister who opened all the asylum hotels, and both were heavily attacked by Reform about this time last year.
And now they've obviously
let them come in, which was obviously quite confusing. I think for Kemi Badenoch, I think this is definitely...
It's like crushing, damaging, really.
I'd say for Robert Jenrick, the way that she kicked him out, she took a very bad situation and she made something where people could have a discussion on whether it was actually a good thing or a bad thing, which is actually a huge, extremely good thing to do.
Yeah, I feel like she said it was Robert Jenrick is not my problem anymore, or something like that, I think she said, which is, I mean, what Rory said as well, she managed to turn into something better than what it could have been.
I think her leadership's also really secure now. Like, if things go badly in May, there's no one really who could take over.
Because Jenrick was always going to be the one who challenged her originally, if you thought, because obviously she did obviously beat him to become leader of the Conservative Party. So now with him out of the way, she can now focus on building that stable leadership.
Yeah.
Because without a leadership challenge, then that makes... She can put more pressure on people like Keir Starmer, who have a potential leadership challenge in maybe Angela Rayner or Andy Burnham.
Yeah, I think it's also quite problematic for Reform, because obviously they've said they would get a Labour defection after Nadine Zahawi defected and they got three Tories MPs instead, which on the surface seems like a much better trade. But actually, if you look at the polls, Reform are still going down and the Tories are still going up. So I think it shows a lot of desperation from Reform UK to be getting two very senior defections, but not a lot of ground covered since those defections. And I think also them saying, like, May the 7th will be like closing day, the doors will close, no one will come in. I think that's also them saying, basically, everyone just join us now so we can have a good set of May elections that can prove our worth, and then we can go and win in 2029. And I think particularly if Reform do badly in Wales, if they had like a Caerphilly type result where people are thinking, oh, they might form the next government, and they actually fall very short, which actually a lot of the polls are now saying, new Welsh polls are saying Plaid's going to win. Instead of that two-horse race, it's now looking heavily like that Plaid will win. I think that'll be very damaging to the actual concrete evidence that is behind Reform surge.
Yeah. Don't you think that Reform still need some sort of experience in terms of leadership? Because obviously Nigel Farage has never actually held high office. This is his first time actually being voted in as an MP.
Well, he is an MP, but I think you could say the exact same about Kemi Badenoch. Yes, she does have cabinet experience, but she's never been the Prime Minister before.
Well, no, but it's more than what Nigel Farage has ever had.
But I think the problem with Reform is they say, oh, we want more defections so we can form some leadership structure, but there is no...
But they're relying solely on defections, not people actually volunteering to join their party.
But I think what I would say about the lack of experience that Reform have, I think if you look at it, they do actually have quite a lot of experience. They've got... from a period, the entire Conservative Home Office with Robert Jenrick and Suella Braverman in 2023. But also, like, they're full of businessmen and they're talking about how they're going to bring businessmen into cabinet. And I think with those two big issues, economy and immigration, which is the main things that the Conservatives are focusing on, obviously Cammy's stronger borders, stronger economy, I think that would definitely disprove a lot of the, not rumours, but ideas surrounding reform that they have no experience.
And how do you both think that Labour, the Liberal Democrats, or even the Green Party are also going to benefit from these defections, not just reform? Daniel, what do you think about this?
So I think they're definitely showing now that like reform definitely isn't a wasted vote. I think in the past, with things like sort of single purpose parties and smaller parties, I think the people have thought maybe like this is, I'm just going to vote. I don't think that's going to happen. But now I personally have a fear that reform could definitely have a...
emerges the opposition.
Emerges the victor in elections. We're sort of now growing, as we can see, the radicalisation literally before our eyes of people going from a conservative party to a reform party. Like those politicians, you can see their judgment. It's very telling of the sort of polarizing nature of the UK politics at the moment right now.
Yeah.
And I think it is strengthening for reform. I think that in some ways it's damaging for the Conservative Party. But I think for the Conservative Party's oppositions could also be quite a strengthening thing for them in terms of criticism. Yeah.
I also think for Labour and the Liberal Democrats, perhaps, that obviously the Conservatives are almost fading away as a sort of opposition. So
yeah,
this is obviously going
to
allow
them
to sweep up perhaps more votes, maybe, if they could change the way that people who once voted for the Conservative Party now vote. And this is quite, it's a massive opportunity, isn't it, going into the by-election, seeing as how they can capitalise from this. Rory?
I think I'd say less so for Labour, but certainly for the Lib Dems, given the Tories' rightward shift, they've opened up a lot of space, not just on their right, but also on their left, given the more moderate, the more soft left Labour voters who Labour have kind of forgotten about and that people like Andy Burnham advocate for. Their polling has been quite stagnant and they have been quite forgotten, the Lib Dems, because obviously people are becoming much more polarised into going either voting Green or reform for anti-establishment parties or the two main parties if they want some like proper genuine experience, be it good or bad, probably bad. But I think also for the Tories, particularly Kerry Badenoch, I think she's really dealt with these defections very well.
Very well, yeah.
Bar the post from the Tories about Suella Braverman's mental health, I think they have definitely like strengthened an argument of like all this spring cleaning. But even this talk about like reform being the Tories 2.0, I think what the Tories aren't own, like, I think an argument that they're really not establishing is that like if you want to vote for reform, yes, they're probably, they're just like a watered down version of the Conservatives. So surely you would vote for the Conservatives if you want the proper deal, which really spins the argument of Kemi Badenoch that you can't really out Farage. But I think it should be shifted back to the fact that there are only 8 MPs for reform. There are 116 for the Conservatives and that reform are trying to out Tory the Tories.
The Tories, yeah.
So I think they've definitely got to kind of create a boost, take the initiative, but also like use that argument that, yeah, it's reform who are trying to imitate us, so surely you would vote for the real genuine thing
instead of
with the real experience.
Very
that's
very
Which no one, I actually haven't heard anyone talk about, and that's just something I think about. Because, I'm very much against reform. I think ideologically, I wouldn't be so hesitant in voting for them. I'd definitely consider voting for them in like a tactical sense to keep
obviously
the Greens out.
Could actually
but I'm definitely not as like right wing or extreme as people like. Obviously, I'm not going to be like people like Sarah Poachin who on like hot mics say controversial things, talking about people from minority backgrounds in adverts, which I think is actually really, really wrong, and I can't agree with at all, unsurprisingly. But I think the broadness of the Tory party, its centrist elements and its right-wing elements, bring not just, well, even though you could say it was inconsistency, but it provides a more sensible, thought-through opinion if you're going to have to get people from one side of politics or one side of the party and then people on the other side of the party. Whereas Reform is just a concentrated group of people on the right-wing fringes of the Conservative Party. And I think they won't, they all agree with each other, so there's going to be no discussion. They're just going to go into government, rely on instinct, which they don't have a lot of because they don't have a lot of experience. And I think that's going to be very damaging for this country.
Okay. And now for our final segment. And I'm going to be asking my co-hosts here, Daniel and Rory, which of the leaders... Oh, hell no. I'm now going to be asking them, which of the leaders would they trust the most to run the country? Now, Rory, what are your thoughts on this?
I would 100% say Kemi Badenoch, and I'm not just some old, like, right-wing Tory. I'm not, like... Obviously, I like the... Even though they're not... Even though they haven't been seen as unprofessional, but just looking at the stories today, Labour is completely scandal-ridden, similar to what the Tories were. But I think the real fight from the Tory front bench and the Tory party, I think they're languishing in the polls has actually brought a huge, like, wake-up call to the Tories that they have. They've put in a lot of work to not only maintain where they are in the polls, but to increase that number, because currently they're in a deficit from where they were in 2024. Even though they are on the rise and people are listening to them a little bit more now, I think the professionalisation and the kind of party-first approach of reforming things, maybe not from a policy front, but for reforming the party, I think is definitely going to be provide long-term benefits for Kemi Badenoch and her leadership. I think her shadow cabinet, I like a lot of them, even though you could say, oh, well, she was really incompetent in government. She was the person that really facilitated all this migration crisis.
Yeah.
I do actually quite like Priti Patel. I think Mel Stride... No, it's controversial.
We'll have a chat about that one next time.
But I think she's really... I think her fiery nature is really competent, particularly with the Chagos Islands. I think Mel Stride, he's more in the centre... he's much more of a centrist. I think that's exactly what you probably need in the Treasury right now. You need someone with stability. Rachel Reeves has said that her first priority is stability, which she has done, but it's just stability in a downwards direction. Yeah. I think the new Shadow Justice Secretary, Nick Timothy, I think he's very genuine and I really like him as well. So just to answer your question really bluntly, I do think that Kemi Badenoch and the wider Conservative Party would, and the front bench that she's offering, are definitely the most professional and the party that I would trust the most with the country.
Daniel, what do you think? Which leader would you trust the most?
I mean, idealistically, I'd love Ed Davies to succeed. you can see a bit of contrast in the room.
That's fair enough.
Between me and Rory.
Nice fresh take.
Yeah. I think realistically speaking, also I'd say... if I was being completely reasonable, Kemi Badenoch does show very, very strong, very stable leadership. I think trustworthy also. Like, there's not much that I doubt about her ability to lead the country and to lead her party. So, as I said again, idealistically, I mean, I'd love to see the Liberal Democrats in power. But I mean, realistically.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
I think it's what I find confusing...
I can tell you who I don't want in power.
That's a conversation for next time.
Yeah, well, I think, just to take you up on that really quickly, I think Ed Davey is... realistically, he's like... I'm not going to... Obviously not disparaging to Ed Davey, but I think his policy and his arguments are a bit...
Well, he likes hanging
a bit
around.
Moronic.
He likes doing stuff.
They're a bit moronic. In the election campaign, he was going down water slides. He's now, like, completely criticising Donald Trump, which, like, yes, it worked in the case of Greenland, but I don't think we should really be, like, annoying the leader of... a very hot-tempered leader of the world's biggest economy. And also, he was criticising the Tories' record on the environment during 2010 to 2015, when he was the Environment Secretary. So I don't really understand what his general arguments are. So I wouldn't trust Ed Davey or the Lib Dems with the country because they have a very fluid and actually quite not unrespected, but they don't have a very consistent or relevant ideology at this point. They're only like averaging like 12% in the polls.
Yep.
And I think the fact that they're not making bigger gains, I think that is that is probably quite a failure of his leadership. You'd be expecting them to be doing about like 20%, like those summer 2019 type figures, given that Labour's moving has moved to the right, and that they can now, and the Tories have also moved to the right. So there's a large centrist space that obviously the new Tory think tank Prosper UK is now trying to hoover up. So I think Ed Davey, I don't think he's weak, but I think he's just inconsistent. He's challenging himself when he was his own record in the environment department. But also he doesn't have a lot of structure either. He has a front bench, but you can't say it's a shadow cabinet, and you can't really, considering he's got 72 MPs, which is the largest that the Lib Dems have ever had since like formation, excluding like the Liberals before that. But I think you do see that from the Tories. And I do agree with you. I don't see that from Reform either. And I think that would be very dangerous as well if we use the same principles.
Yeah. So that wraps up our look then on the ICE shootings, Zach Polanski's rise and Conservative defections. And across all of these stories, you can see politics under pressure, institutions, parties and leaders all being tested at once. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Ballot, and join us next week as we keep unpacking the stories shaping politics at home and abroad. Thank you.
Goodbye.